Welcome into the Fan pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. For the next hour, we'll be joined by Frank Saravelli in moments and Michael Grange in about half an hour as we tee up Sixers and Raptors on Sportsnet 1 at 7:30.
Yeah, last time I checked, Michael Grange doesn't cover G League basketball.
This is a G League match.
With the amount, we'll get to it, the amount of absences for the Raptors and 76ers is, in a word, staggering. So we'll ask him about that, but a lower level assignment, I guess, tonight for Grange.
Yeah, but we'll find a way. It's a tank off, battle of the benches. Lots of fun ways to get your leads written if you're Michael Grange tonight. As the Raptors host the Sixers. That's at 7:30. A big game tonight, Vancouver and Calgary. It's a 9 p.m. start on Sportsnet, but that's going to be a pretty big one. Playoff implications, both Canadian teams, basically four teams fighting for one wild card spot there, and the Calgary Flames holding on to it, Vancouver right behind them. So a big game on the network, and we'll talk about that with Frank Saravelli. We're going to do a little golf preview because it's the Players' Championship teeing off tomorrow morning. A lot of Canadians in the fold. What else are we going to talk about?
Yeah, good amount of Canadians.
This happened yesterday.
Yeah, more Vladdy talk. I think we'll get into maybe the latest will tilt your opinion on who may or may not be in the wrong, if there needs to be something or someone in the wrong, whether there should be a deal based on how little seems to separate the two parties. So yeah, we'll unpack more Vladdy conversation because it's a big deal. And it seems like it's a smaller chasm between them at this point. So maybe no sense of it getting out of hand like it did with, you know, Mikko Rantanen and maybe with Mitch Marner.
Yeah, we'll go through it all. Okay, let's bring in Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, how are you?
Really good. How are you guys? I feel like a human being again now after trade deadline's over.
Oh, yeah. Did you get to kick your feet up after? Like, what's it like as an insider when you get to put your phone down?
I'd say the weekend was filled with cheerleading competitions and minor hockey and whatever else my wife set me on to do.
How do, obviously, Ailish played hockey. I played hockey. I'm assuming you played some hockey, Frank. Like, you kind of understand hockey parents. What are cheerleading parents all about? Is that
there's a whole show about it?
I bet it. Cheer moms. It's probably a little nasty.
It's gross. Like, honestly, I'm really sick of the minor hockey circuit. And my coach, this upcoming season will be my sixth year coaching, and it's probably going to be my last. Like we do it a little different here in the U.S. We actually have tryouts this week and next week. So for next season already, I know you guys are just getting to playoffs, and the politicking, the parading of players, it's the whole thing, the recruiting, it's gross.
That's I don't miss those days.
So you prefer to go to cheerleading practice then?
No, honestly, that in an odd way, that's worse. I think it's more destructive. It's like you're dealing with, you know, all sorts of emotions and makeup and jealousy, bullying. It's a whole other thing.
Oh, God. Jeez,
doesn't sound that fun. But kudos to you for mixing in coaching while doing the insider thing, which is busy enough. Okay, so you mentioned it. You kind of got to put your phone down, if not for a brief moment. But I'm sure you've had a lot of conversations since the trade deadline. You know, when you're unpacking, I guess, those conversations, what's the most interesting thing you've been talking about since the deadline?
Honestly, there's been so much talk about the Mikko Rantanen thing, and I think we've beaten this to death. Which four teams were they? Was Edmonton included? Were they not? How close were teams? You know, did it advance? Like, in the end, I mean, I get the idea, and fans are always intrigued by the blow-by-blow of how it all worked. And certainly the most interesting part of it is the Mitch Marner connection and now how the Leafs are going to try and put that genie back in the bottle again. But, I mean, short of that, like, there's always a few tidbits here or there, but this, from a player movement perspective, quality of players that were moved and also the timing of it all, the drama and suspense, I think this honestly was one of the most intriguing and fulfilling deadlines that we've had in a long time.
Let's stick on that Rantanen situation. Like, were you surprised with the, I guess, public displeasure that Rod Brind'Amour was showing, whether it's towards Tulsky, towards the situation in general, and then, you know, obviously hearing from the player side and the agent side, just that this became so personal, it felt, to Rod Brind'Amour in a sense?
I'm really not, and I do want to clear up, I think, one misconception that's existed, that some of the comments that were directed were in any way from Rod Brind'Amour to Eric Tulsky. That is not the case. That front office and that head coach are in lockstep in a way that so few others are in the NHL. Like, he quite literally has a seat at their war room table on Friday during trade deadline. Occasionally, a head coach around the league might get a call or a text or a, hey, what do you think about this or that? But not in the way that things revolve around Rod Brind'Amour. And frankly, the type of players that Carolina specifically targets to play and fit in his style. Because in Tom Dundon's own words, their owner, he said he'd like to have Rod Brind'Amour remain as coach forever. And so to see him get worked up or to issue, you know, to say things like that, I think part of it is just a defense of the crest, right? To use a hockey term. He's upset that for better or for worse, A, Mikko Rantanen didn't like it in Carolina, which is in his view and probably some others hard to do. And B, or that he just didn't give them a chance. And I think both those things would be hard to stomach for a guy who, you know, is so ingrained in the Carolina Hurricanes and vice versa.
Canucks and Flames on Wednesday Night Hockey on Sportsnet tonight. Two teams in vastly different situations, but like kind of the same spot here, fighting for a wild card spot in the Western Conference. I want to touch on both. We'll start, though, in Vancouver. A playoff spot, like generally for most teams, 90% of teams, that's kind of like, hey, that'll soothe some of the concern for many parties, whether it's players, coaches, management. But if Vancouver makes the playoffs, like does that like change the way this offseason may go in any discernible way? Like, it just feels like there are a lot of different pieces to the puzzle who are agitated, exasperated, maybe in need of like serious conversations at the very minimum. But does it kind of all get a little alleviated if this team can squeeze into the playoffs?
Not for me, because I think they're still fundamentally flawed. And I guess you could take some steps this summer to address some of those things, but when you have the off-ice drama that they've had that seeped into their game quite clearly, beyond that, and I don't know that enough people have talked about the roster turnover from year to year. I mean, we're talking about a third of that team changed out from last year's playoff team to this one. Then you throw on top of it the injuries that they've had, not just to Quinn Hughes, but also to their franchise goalie and Thatcher Demko. And it's been an ugly turn of events. And you've got a situation where, what is your team structure moving forward? Who is the backbone of your team once you get past Quinn Hughes? Is Brock Besser coming back? Will Elias Pettersson be back? Do you have a center to build around? And with JT Miller gone, and then now Rick Tocchet in the final year of his deal pending the option, I mean, we're talking about wholesale potential changes that, if the Vancouver Canucks get in this year, the first question I'd be asking is, okay, when's the next time we see them in the playoffs again?
Same might be said for the Calgary Flames, not to be a Debbie Downer on a pretty positive subject. But, you know, this happens in the NHL where a team seriously overshoots expectation and then it all kind of comes to roost the next year. Like, you could see them taking multiple steps forward this year and then kind of falling back to where they should be in terms of their trajectory. I don't really want to doom cast for the Flames, but I'll put it to you this way. What do they got to do to make sure that, you know, they stay a couple steps ahead of what we expect them to be, given what they have at stake this summer?
Yeah, I was going to say, congratulations on taking one of the best stories in the league this year.
Classic and Justin.
Yeah. What is this show emanating from Vancouver? What's happening there? Sorry. I would say that, look, the biggest thing is seizing and harnessing the power that is Dustin Wolf. Mm-hmm. I'll say it to you super clearly. If the Calgary Flames make the playoffs, Dustin Wolf is getting the number one spot on my Calder Trophy ballot, and it won't really even be that much of a debate. Their lack of offense, the lack of run support that they've had in front of him is evident. When you look at the other teams that are in their tight circle of goals for this season, all those teams are way worse than them in the standings. We're talking about some of the bottom feeders of the entire league. And yet, because of the way that Wolf has played and taken the bull by the horns in Calgary, he's put them in a spot where they can now compete. And so if you're somewhere between 15th and 20th in the league, how can they find a way to continue to shift this forward, to go from 18th to 14th to 16th to 12th and continue moving forward? They're going to take steps to be aggressive to try and do that. And they're going to try and fit more players that fit their age scheme. But I think it's a realization that they're closer than they might think. And that's not necessarily music to Flames fans' ears, who wanted them to take this down brick by brick and build it back up again. Sometimes that's not possible. Sometimes that's not the best course of action. But in their case, just because you don't vault instantly into the Stanley Cup contender category doesn't mean you can't continue to layer upon layer and see if you can get closer.
Yeah, we got that game, Vancouver and Calgary, 9 p.m. tonight on Sportsnet. Looking forward to seeing the positive story of the Calgary Flames. I want to stick with some positives in Canada. I think the Ottawa Senators currently are minus 1,000 to make the playoffs. So for those betting, plan accordingly. That's a bit crazy. But I do want to ask you about that Cousins-Norris swap. Cousins looks reinvigorated. I think it just took him getting out of Buffalo. I'm sure people can relate. But looking at that fit in Ottawa and what that Sens team could do down the stretch, tell us, first of all, about the Norris-Cousins swap and, you know, maybe the meaning behind it, and what you think the Sens potential is with their minus 1,000 odds to make the playoffs.
Those odds are kind of surprising to me. I mean, look, as well as they've played, and not only just some massive wins, but against the right teams at the right time, these 4-point swing games have been incredibly important for the Sens. They've been a great story too. Like, they've battled all year. Nothing has been easy for them. They've dealt with the Ullmark injuries. They've dealt with some dips in play, and yet they're right there. Obviously, Brady Tkachuk missed a little time as well. The Norris and Cousins swap is a fascinating one, because I guess if you are Ottawa, you certainly understand the idea of, well, Josh Norris is continually banged up with the shoulder, and he may be the higher level consistent producer. But if we're true believers in Dylan Cousins and we believe in that 68-point season, 31 goals as a 21-year-old, that he could get back to close to that level, plus the second-round pick, this is a home run for a guy who's missed 150-some games with three surgeries on the same shoulder. The bigger question I'd ask, and it's not toward the Sens, it's toward the Sabres. You've had teams calling you since November, at least, trying to get their hands on Dylan Cousins. Why did you feel like Friday was the need, like you had a need to make the deal in that exact moment in time? That's the part that surprised me, was could you have held on for a few more months until the summer and opened it up to all, you know, 31 other teams to make a deal? And the change of scenery is obvious for Cousins, and he scores that big goal against the Wings the other night, and you can see how much it meant to him just to be even playing in that type of environment in that moment, that you would think things would only build from there. I think the Sens are a live dog. I really do, in round one, if you want to play the odds game. Because when you have a goalie like Ullmark, if he reaches the level that he can, he's got series-stealing ability. Plus, we just saw in Four Nations, Brady Tkachuk, when he gets to that, you know, spot where he, you know, his wires cross, you're talking about a whole different animal when it comes to the playoffs that I think the Sens have been drooling to give their fans a taste of.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm playing the minus 1,000, but the plus money in a first-round series involving
Ottawa. Ullmark just had 48 saves in a game.
I think I'll be interested in that. With the goaltender, the star player, and a pretty good blue line as well. I mean, you can kind of like, you can see it coming with the Cousins thing. Like, not to say that he's going to be superstar player with the Ottawa Senators and live up to his value, exceed his value, but that he's having and giving an immediate return is kind of the obvious thing when you consider the Sabres part of it.
They traded him at his absolute lowest value.
Yeah.
Ever.
So I want to get into a hypothetical with you, which may not be fair because Rasmus Dahlin, you know, is telling everyone in the world that, hey, he's denying that he wants out of Buffalo. But let's say he is, like a lot of people, and gets fed up about the situation there with the Sabres. Like, what happens if on June 30th he issues a formal trade request? Is the entire league falling over themselves trying to get Rasmus Dahlin out of Buffalo? Like, it's so hard to evaluate how good a defenseman really is on a team that is that bad, but I feel like this is the sort of guy that would cause a bit of a frenzy.
I don't know if I'm necessarily sold on that. I think the contract is stiff and it's expensive. And I think the big question that I look at with Dalene and his game as it's unfolded, and I think, by the way, you're totally right, that it's the biggest struggle or the biggest hole in the NHL analytics game is, to me, successfully isolating a defenseman from his team results. Mm-hmm. and the impact that he could have. What would the same defenseman look like somewhere else? And we're going to get another great test case in that study with Seth Jones going from Chicago to Florida. You take the pressure off of the high cap hit, asked to be the guy, and then all of a sudden you put him in and say, hey, just go play. It's a totally different scenario. With Dalene, what is it that he really excels at? Like, what part of his game are you dying to get your hands on? I've heard teams call about Owen Power. I've heard teams call about, obviously, J.J. Paterka, who made it to my trade targets board. And I do think that there's a huge chunk, and rightfully so, of this Buffalo Sabres roster that is fed up and is saying, look, we don't see a path forward here. We are not playing meaningful games. We're in last place. How do we change up the mojo here? How do we change up the feel and vibe around this team? Because it's been bad for years, and there's not really much light at the end of the tunnel.
We're chatting with Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. Can you reenact your 10 seconds after seeing that Brad Marchand was going to be a Florida Panther?
It's quite the ask.
I can't because I'm a really poor actor.
Okay, but what were the feelings? What were the words that were allowed to say on television? Were you surprised?
Yeah, I just said wow, and it's wow. not so much for the destination. Mm. It's more so just that Brad Marchand is traded, and then you hear some of the reporting afterwards, and again, not all of it verified, but you know, if the numbers are correct and he was looking for 7.5 and they were at 6.3, like, I think that was the biggest thing that I struggled with over the weekend was how did these two sides not find a way to bridge a gap? And maybe it's because they didn't really want to. Maybe because they're taking, you know, they're ripping the Band-Aid off and they're trading Charlie Coyle and Trent Frederick and Brandon Carlo and Justin Brazeau. They're all out the door and they're saying, look, like, we're not going to be as competitive as we were once shooting for next season. Does it really make sense to lock up, even though he's the heart and soul and captain of our team, does it make sense to lock up a guy until he's 40? Because it might take us a couple years to get back in the mix. Now, I think they're starting from a great position because they've got a top 10 winger in the game, a top 10 defenseman in the game, and a top 10 goalie. Those are all great building blocks and kind of brings me back to the point we were just making about the Calgary Flames that some teams, even if you want to, you just can't tear it down. And the Bruins are another great example of that with the contracts that they have on the books.
I'm sure you had some winners, losers, maybe some post-deadline grades or at least some conversation around who did well and who didn't. But it's different.
By the way, I want to jump in, though, because I will say the Bruins would be one of my teams that were a winner. And I know people weren't happy with the Marchand trade, but if you're going to rip the Band-Aid off, do it and don't just dip your toe in the water. Sell off as much as you can, as quickly as you can, and get as much back as you can.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of thinking about with the Sabres. Like, I know you can't do this, but like, if you're just going to do the same thing every year where you trade a disgruntled player because you're not having success, or at least a distressed asset because you're not having success, and the same story is written every single year and you can't find any traction because, yeah, you just have the same group, albeit slightly diminished. Why not just rip the entire Band-Aid off there? But that's probably not going to happen. I did want to get, though, go ahead.
Where do you even go with that?
Who do you start?
Like, it can't get worse, but like, again, how do you sell one of the great things about rebuilds is you can sell to your fan base that there's hope.
Yeah.
If you start moving away the number one overall picks,
well, not that, not that.
Forever to build up.
Oh, my God.
Like, how do you even sell it now?
No, I don't know. But you can't sell what you got. They're in an impossible situation. But if you, again, just like do the double rebuild, like you're resetting on everything and you just create Thunder war chest that has got them in a really good position now, like I understand it's going to take a long time, but this mix isn't going to work. Like there's no evidence to suggest that what they have in terms of their skeleton is going to yield anything. Is there?
Not to me. I mean, look, you took you forever to get these guys. And then as soon as Kevin Adams came in, he was preaching patience. He goes, look, I get that there's this long playoff drought, and that stinks. But guess what? I wasn't here for any of that, so you can't pin that on me. And now it's year five, and we turn around, and all of this patience has turned into, oh, my God, I really like the guys on our team. I like our roster. I like our players. And you can like some of the pieces individually. You can like Tage Thompson or J.J. Paterka or whoever it is that you want. But when the collection of their parts doesn't fit and doesn't have any success, you've got to make tough decisions to move on from them. And waiting until Friday of the trade deadline for a team that's been in last place since November, that has been getting frantic calls on these players, I don't know that that does anything to move the ball down the field, because it just feels like if there wasn't a deadline, would this trade have even materialized at all? Let alone, again, not to use my words, but someone else is another NHL GM. You traded for a guy with a long-term $7.9 million contract who has a mashed potato for a shoulder.
Tough times at Buffalo. Is there a team over the last 5 nights that has given you the Brad Marchand wow? Like, I was getting to, you know, deadline grades and whatever, but until you see it in practice, well, that should formulate maybe the more hardened opinion. Have you seen anything watching hockey last couple nights that's been like, okay, that's legitimate?
Not really. I think it's a little bit too early. I can tell you teams that have solidified it the wrong way, and that's the Detroit Red Wings. Like, you can stick a fork in them for me. They're done. They're on track for 84 points. And right now, the bar to entry, the barrier to entry is 90 with the Blue Jackets. And historically, it's been closer to 93 or 94. I just don't see a path for the Wings, who have lost six in a row, who have come back to earth after that incredible run under Todd McClellan. And then that deadline was so deflating for Detroit. They didn't do anything to help their team in a year in which I think we all just assumed that Steve Yzerman would pull something out of his sleeve to say, hey, we're right on the brink of this. We're knocking on the door. Let's bust it in and make sure that we get into the postseason this year. And they didn't do anything.
They're the competent Buffalo Sabres. Like, they're getting to that point.
I don't know that anyone wants to be connected to that.
No. Competent Buffalo Sabres.
Frank, we will let you go, but I wanted to note that I saw your new sign behind you. I need a nap.
Is that
not new?
That's never been there.
Not new.
You haven't studied the backdrop like I have.
No, I feel like it's like a game when Frank comes on. It's this I spy. What was it always there?
It's been there.
Or have you moved it?
And no, it's
the moose has just drawn attention to it.
Yep. Yeah, you just saw the moose. And what I would say is the big thing with my backdrop that I've been struggling with is like how much Eagles Super Bowl paraphernalia should I put back there?
And it's like much.
I know, I should probably just keep it classy.
Yeah, it looks great. But I swear I hadn't seen that. I need a nap. Maybe that's a sign for me that I do need a nap. Maybe. You only see it when you need it. That's it. Okay, Frank, thanks so much for coming
for
on. We'll chat
English
next week. Yeah, thanks for playing. Okay, bye. It's Frank Saravalli, president of Hockey Content, Daily Faceoff. Have you seen that before?
Yeah, I've
well,
seen
I guess
him holding
I'm
it
so
up at
focused
one point.
On,
there's like a screenshot of him holding it up.
I'm focused so much on our interview with Frank that I don't usually look in the background. So maybe today that sign was calling to me.
A couple interesting things.
That I need a nap.
Out of that interview, one of which has been Dustin Wolf. His vote, if they make the playoffs, going to Dustin Wolf. I think that's interesting. What are the odds of them making the playoffs versus...
What are the odds on the
what
trophy?
What is him winning the Calder Trophy? I think that's worth checking out, maybe in the break.
I have it in front of me.
And also today, NHL.com had Zach Werenski ahead of Cale Makar and, I guess, the banged-up Quinn Hughes for the Norris Trophy. So we didn't get to it. We'll get to it next week with him, all the award races. It feels like everything's sort of hanging in the balance except for maybe the Jack Adams and the Vezina.
I can tell you that both of those... Calder and Norris do not have those people as the favorites on the books.
Mm-hmm. I would have guessed that.
We've got a best bet segment coming up later, so we will get to all of that.
Okay.
But an exciting new addition to the fan pregame is our Subaru Golf Report. This golf report is brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Subaru, welcome to Uncommon. Perfect timing to join the show because it's the Players' Championship teeing off tomorrow, and we're going to have seven Canadians in the fold.
Speaking of Uncommon, seven Canadians
in
the fifth major.
That's Canadians.
A pretty good group of Canucks hanging out
it's
there.
It's amazing. TBC Sawgrass. So we've got Connors, Hughes, Pendrith, Taylor, Hadwin, Silverman, and Svensson at the field for TBC Sawgrass. And, I mean, this isn't technically major championship, but it's going to be a $25 million purse. So it's a big one. It's the biggest, one of the biggest events on the PGA tournament. And of course, it kind of kicks off what's going to be a string of really big tournaments. So for me, I'm looking at obviously Canadians, and Corey Connors coming off his best finish of the season at Arnold Palmer, which just wrapped up last weekend. He was solo third behind Colin Morikawa and Russell Henley, and he's just playing some really good golf as of late, his second top five finish of the season. So looking forward to seeing what Corey and the Canadians have in store.
Yeah, two-time defending champion Scottie Scheffler has not won yet this year, getting the late start after cutting his hand. I believe it was Christmas that he suffered the laceration on the hand. So maybe it's wide open here, because it's going to take a little while for him to get ready. And clearly, you know, guys who have had success generally win the Players. I know they moved it up in the calendar a little bit, but generally, like, guys who are in form win this tournament. And if we're doing the Canadian thing, like, I know Corey Connor's coming off a good week, but Nick Taylor, as we've discussed before, is the Canadian who can win these big events. He's won big events in the past, and Corey Connors, we love, but he's Valero Texas Open in terms of his winning pedigree, whereas Nick Taylor can hang in these big moments, these signature events when a lot of money's on the line. It seems like Nick Taylor can deliver on the big stage. So, yeah, I'll be watching Connors, but I'm going to be watching Nick Taylor further down in terms of, like, the expectations would be Nick Taylor. But in terms of Canadians with a chance, I'd put him at the top of my list.
Yeah, Taylor's the only Canadian to record a victory on the tour this season, has made the cut in all six of his events in 2025.
Pretty good.
Not bad. All right, we will continue this for the rest of the week, and we're going to talk to Adam Stanley on Friday from the tournament. So he'll give us an update after two rounds. This golf report was brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Subaru, welcome to Uncommon. We will take a quick break. Michael Grange will join us ahead of a big one, the Sixers and the Raptors. Well, what's left of both of those skeleton teams?
I should know this. The G League, we'll figure it out. The G League affiliate of the 76ers. Is this a 905 versus whomever that is tonight?
That's it. Way to tee it up. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Get smarter when you listen to Hockey Talk, the Hockey PDO cast with Dmitry Filipovich. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Fan Pregame on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 Fan. I just went through and looked at all the recent videos on our Twitter page where we interview Frank Saravelli. And yes, I Need a Nap is basically in the shot of every single published clip. So that's, I'm not embarrassed by it. I'm focused on the man and his storytelling and not on the background.
There was a set redesign though.
Yeah, we did take a look. So, and then some of the framing has it cut off. So, you know, anyway. We also, in the break, because I know you're all interested, pulled up the names of all of the G League teams because, you know, tonight, kind of seeing one.
Blue Coats 905 tonight.
And we might have to power rank some of these. Like the Indiana Mad Ants. Like, I would love to play for the Mad Ants.
Would you?
Yeah, sounds awesome.
Where does 905 rank on this?
It's pretty low, actually, when you look at some of the names. I think Capital City Go-Go are the best.
Yeah. In terms of, like, you know, teams that put themselves out there, that's about it.
Yeah.
It's pretty...
It's mid.
Forgettable.
Okay, and we bring you in to Michael Grange at Sportsnet as we tee up the game of the century. Grange, how's it going, buddy? How are you?
Hanging in.
Are you covering G League games? Not in your contract, I heard. So what's going on tonight?
I don't even know what's going on. I mean, this is just what you get this time of year when you have two teams with priorities that don't match the stated goals, which is winning basketball games. And, you know, they've arrived here at very different places, and you know, the vibe around the Raptors has actually been kind of fun. You know, like you're getting guys getting to do cool things and play, you know, increased roles and kind of show that they're developing as young players. It's all very exciting, and then, you know, the other side of the court is, you know, the Sixers, and it's, you know, it's miserable, right? Like, I mean, this is a team that was supposed to be, you know, competing for an NBA championship, just that they've been supposed to be doing for about 8 years now, and every single thing that could have gone wrong has gone wrong.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, going to be part of the story for Nick Nurse when it comes to the Sixers and his Sixers tenure. But, you know, when we look at the story that will be written here for Nick Nurse, like, you know, how much is on him? It's probably low, given that, you know, we're looking at the roster tonight. You understand the Joel Embiid story. You understand that Paul George is more interested in podcasting than playing basketball, at least it seems. He does have Tyrese Maxey, we won't see tonight.
He
but
took
like,
some time off his podcast, Justin.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
It seems to be going well. He's
going to take some time off.
Not playing tonight. Go back to podcasting.
Under 500 when he decided to stop the podcast.
That's true.
It's really, like, do you sympathize with him? Is that the story that we should feel sorry for Nick Nurse in some ways?
Well, I mean, I guess empathy would be the right way to put it. I certainly don't pity him, and you know, I think he'll be fine. But you know, we were just talking about it earlier with him, and you know, he was just saying how, like, no, even though it started off so poorly, I think they were, you know, they started off 2-7 or something. They were 4-15 at one point. You know, they kind of would keep sort of putting together a couple of wins. They had a good December. They got to within 5 games of .500. They were going to be, you know, high in the play-in and maybe even still dream of being a playoff team the way the East is shaped out. But, you know, every step forward, there'd be 2 steps back with an injury or something else. And it wasn't just Embiid. It wasn't just Paul George. You know, Maxey missed a bunch of games. Then you had guys like Aaron Gordon. These kind of depth pieces, they sort of had to come out your roster in a cost-effective way. So I guess, you know, I certainly can't put it on Nick Nurse. I don't think anyone reasonably could put it on Nick Nurse. I just think that the vibe around this team really cratered. And, you know, I think that doesn't mean he's safe and has a job in perpetuity. If anything, the pressure has just increased in Philadelphia. You still got that faint hope that, you know, Joel Embiid can get his knee right. And, you know, what Paul George went through this year was, you know, a bit of a, I wouldn't say an exception given his career, but kind of a worst case scenario. And Ty Maxey's still in his prime. So I think there's, you know, so going into next year, if you're the Sixers, I'm sure the discussion is going to be, this could be our last rack. And, you know, is there anything that needs to change to make sure that next year it's fresh and it's guys are coming in here with the right attitude and they can make something happen? And, you know, is Nick part of that equation or not? I mean, I'm sure that's going to be part of the discussion.
Grange, we're just going to reconnect with you because it sounded like you had phones were maybe not plugged in properly, or
we can hear you, but it's not as crisp as we'd
like. I want
to
hear the crisp injury report from Michael Grange of this team for the Delaware Blue Coats. So we're just going to reconnect with Michael Grange.
As is tradition, you will hit the Tankathon, and we'll see where the Raptors place in terms of the lottery. But Grange mentioned it off the top.
They've arrived here in different ways?
No, they have. They definitely have.
Oh, big time.
But the vibes are like up with the Raptors, which is not something they've always had. Like, on the way down, it was vibeless. There was the weirdness between Scotty and maybe the old guard, and obviously that's flipped over. But if there's a reason why the Raptors don't pick in the top three, don't get Cooper Flagg, don't get whomever it may be that goes 2, 3, 4, if they fall out of position, the main reason might be vibes. That this team has played well together, played for each other, kept a level of positivity up during a season that was advertised as zero expectations. You look around the league, there are some real dark situations. The Sixers may be leading that.
Big
time. But there are teams that are just like hopeless. And with the Raptors, it just doesn't feel hopeless. And for that reason, they might be, you know, not getting the hope of bringing in a Cooper Flagg at the end of the year.
Okay, let's try this again. Michael Grange joined us from Scotiabank. Grange, how are we sounding?
You guys sound great.
So, well, you sound good. We'll give you that. I don't know what's going on, but we will grind it out, Grange. Where were we going? You just asked about Nick Nurse. Let's talk about this Raptors team. So they're not, I don't think they're tanking well, but I don't think that that's the real like vibe for them anyway. 1-4 the last 5 games, 14-12 in their last 26, but the half game behind the Sixers, who they're playing tonight, are they closer to maybe the play-in spot than a top five pick? And a side note of that, should they maybe recalibrate their focus on what they are doing right now?
I mean, I don't think that they can get the play-in. The game where in Chicago where Emmanuel quickly fouled Kobe White, you know, and they should have won that game. Mm-hmm. They didn't. That he kind of did everyone a big favor there, Emmanuel Quickly there, because that was the tiebreaker with Chicago. I think it's 5 games right now different. So I don't think that they can they're in fear of being in the play-in. And I think when you really look at the, you know, what's likely here, I think it's pretty possible that they end up picking their fifth now. I wouldn't be surprised if Philly's going to pass them. They're doing everything they can, because if they aren't in the top six, if their pick doesn't fall in the top six, then it goes to OKC. So they're very, very motivated to win no more games. And when you look at their lineup they're putting out these days, they're doing their best at that. And Brooklyn's in a kind of a similar situation. So I just think by default, and when you look at the schedule the Raptors have, they're probably going to slip out of fifth into sixth for sure, probably seventh. But I don't know if they'll get much further than that. Mm. So, and they've done a good job. Like, I mean, you know, they've done what they can do. Like, I mean, Jakob Poeltl is... I think he's playing tonight, but I mean, he's played 48 minutes in the past week. Scottie Barnes is out tonight. Emmanuel Quickley is resting again. Like, these guys must be exhausted, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, like, and it's, look, it's all a bigger picture thing. Everyone kind of understands it. But I think from the Raptors' point of view, it's kind of a good news story in a way, because, you know, you really do want to come out of this season drafting with as many lottery balls, so to speak, as possible on lottery night. But you also want to have some foundation of a culture. You want to have young players that are progressing. You don't want it to be misery. You want to somehow kind of make a season in which you're going to win something like 22. Well, they've won 22, so let's say call it 29 games, and everyone can go in the summer feeling good about it and without being phony about it. And I think that's what the Raptors have done. And one reason they've been sort of successful relatively in the past 6-7 weeks is, you know, they've got healthy, and you have guys like, you know, Jamal Shedd playing very well. You have, you know, progress from Jamison Battle. You have this young core of guys who are fighting their own injuries now, who actually you're able to put into an NBA game, and they don't hurt you, and sometimes they help you. I think that's a positive, and I think when you look at sort of your more foundational pieces, there's been progress, there's some encouraging signs, certainly as a group defensively, and all of that. So, I mean, I think when you look at the actual percentages that you're losing or giving up by having the fifth best lottery odds versus the eighth best lottery odds, you know, versus doing everything you can to kind of just absolutely crater your season. I think the way this is going to work out is maybe for the best. Like, some of these teams that have come through that are all in on the tank, let's say, it's not a great environment. You know, they don't play good basketball. They don't have really good development stories. They don't have a light at the end of the tunnel, because they're probably, I'm thinking Utah, I'm thinking, you know, we're going to see Charlotte, we're going to see Brooklyn. Like, this could be an ongoing thing. They might have another season or more of this. And it's a grim product. It's not a great environment for anybody. So I think how the Raptors are kind of going about this, you know, part by strategy, part by just the way things have shaken out, is fine. We'll put it this way. I'm a big believer in tanking. I think it's really important to put yourself in the best position to draft as well as you can. But, you know, you can only do so much and without completely undermining the integrity of your operation.
It seems like a big NBA problem. The NBA has a lot of problems right now. I mean, you got like LeBron and Stephen A. going at it. You got the Dallas Mavericks. You've got, though, about 25%, maybe more, of teams in the NBA right now completely downshifting into the final 6 weeks or so of the season. Like, that isn't great. Like, it's been palatable enough here in Toronto because, yeah, Jacoby Walters hitting winners and this team's playing hard and they seem to like each other, and you can see Brandon Ingram sliding in next year and this team making a big improvement and adding potentially a top draft pick. But you look around the league, like, this is not the best story a league would want to tell. What is this season? How are they going to digest this season in the NBA offices? And can we see a change here, given that, hey, you just mentioned it, tanking's important, but boy, does it hurt your product.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. You know, I don't know if it's more widespread this year or not. I'm sure we're obviously much more aware of it because, you know, it's a local issue, so to speak. But I have kind of asked around. I've done some thinking, like, how could you fix this? And it's interesting. You know, the obvious thing would, okay, well, make it. You can either just completely flatten the draft lottery. In other words, you know, it's just a completely random event, or, you know, the suggestions that over time, you know, the kind of the wheel idea that every 30 years you get the first pick or something like that. You know, and I'm not sure that's a great idea either, because, you know, all it would take would be 1 year when the Cleveland Cavaliers pick one, when they've won 69 games or something, and no one would be happy about that. Similarly, you could be in a market where there's zero hope, right? Like, you're just accumulating a bunch of 14th picks, and, you know, you're just doomed to being average or worse, and you know, that's not great. So, you know, so then you flip to, okay, well, let's take the teams that don't make the play-in, and maybe they should compete. There's some kind of way that you can make the end of the season meaningful that way. Well, you got to be careful, because then you're disincentivizing making the play-in, right? If all of a sudden, you know, you'd be the 11th worst team in your conference and go into some kind of side tournament that if you win, you get the first pick. Well, how does that make the teams that finish 7, 8, 9 feel? Probably not great. So that's a complicated one. And then just in terms of your roster development things, if you were to somehow make it where you would win, like, the better you did, the better you draft, once you're at the audition threshold, well, all of a sudden you're impeding the development of your young players, right? You're signing veteran guys on 10 days. You're squeezing out playing time so your Jamal Sedge or Jacoby Walton say don't develop, you know, all in the name of a pick. So, like, I'm certainly not saying what we have now is a flawless system and let's embrace it. I do wonder if there is a really practical solution that's so easy that hasn't been thought of yet.
So it's been a tough year for the Raptors, but it's been a year of some celebration with the 30th anniversary. Kyle Lowry is out tonight, but he's in town. As you sort of contemplated, reflected all year, how does the Lowry piece fit in? Has anything changed in terms of, like, how this should all go down? Are we inching closer to that day where Lowry is forever enshrined? It's too bad it couldn't have happened in the 30th year, but Lowry back in town and Lowry's future when it comes to, you know, future accolades and the indelible mark he's made.
Yeah, I think number one, as you kind of reflect on there's been a lot of opportunities to do that, as you point out, some really good documentary support system that some of people have done. And, like, he does loom as, like, this pivotal figure in the franchise, right? Like, you know, if he gets traded in 2013-14, maybe none of the rest happens, right? And I think, you know, when you look, you know, now that we have a little distance on it and his level of performance for that 7-8 year run, you know, one of the reasons the Raptors are so good is he was probably a top 15 or 20 player in the NBA through that whole period. And it, you know, I don't think we necessarily appreciated it as well as we do in retrospect at the time. So I think, he's sacrosanct, right? Like, I mean, he is a made man in this city and with this franchise. And, you know, I think what's going to be interesting, the decision for him, I remember talking to him this time a year ago, roughly. And keep in mind, he was starting for a playoff team. He got bought up by Miami a year after starting for them in the finals. And he was starting for the Sixers in the playoffs. He was playing well for them. And I remember asking him, do you see yourself playing like a Garrett Temple role, so to speak, where you're just kind of, you know, you extend your career because you have so much to offer to younger players, but your performance really isn't relevant. And he said at that time, no. Like, that's not something he wanted to do. Well, here he is now. It's been a very disappointing year for the team at large. For him personally, he's been not healthy. He has been healthy. Who knows if he has? He hasn't actually played that great. So it'll be really interesting, I'm sure, if he's going to decide if this is how he wants to go out. Bruins, or if he's going to say, you know what, I can do this for one more year, that'd be 20 in the league, and, you know, this isn't the way I want things to end. So that's obviously going to be an obstacle decision for him, but one I'm sure won't fall in the difference.
All right, Grange, we appreciate your time before tonight's barn burner of a game. I hope you enjoy it. Great to chat. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks so much. That's Michael Grange of Sports Tonight. Look at Sharp. Hey?
Yeah.
I like the mixed patterns with the suit and the shirt. It's a risky move, but he pulled it off.
Okay. There, a little sartorial piece.
Yeah,
from
no, I like the mixed patterns, you know?
Okay.
Look good.
There you go. Can I read some outs tonight?
Yeah. We only have 5 minutes left in the show, so... Yeah, better start now.
I'll go quickly. Embiid out. Paul George out. Eric Gordon out. Kyle Lowry out. Tyrese Maxey out. McCain out. Yabusele. I wanted to see Yabusele out as well. Hood Scafino out. Those are all for the 76ers tonight. For the Raptors out. Barnes, Barrett, Chomche, Dick, Ingram, Mobo, Quickly, Walter. Who's playing?
I actually just saw.
And there may be more because this is like a live thing.
They have nine players available. Here's the...
Oh, there you go. We got Shed, Roden, Battle, Lawson, Temple, Boucher, Pirtle, Robinson.
And so Castleton's a 10-day. Lawson's a two-way. Roden's a two-way. They have nine players available tonight. And, yeah.
Boy, oh, boy.
It is a sight to be seen between those two teams. Okay. Well, why don't we do some best bets?
I don't even want to do mine anymore.
No, I think yours is fun.
Because I got the Raptors -5.
Yeah, which is crazy. I can't believe they can set a line on this game.
Listen, like, I don't love it, and it's probably changed.
I'll look right now if it's changed.
Because, you know, I mean, we're still getting Sixers who are out, too. But this is a vibe check.
It's now -3 Raptors.
There you go. Okay, so we're changing that. We're taking the 3.
Yeah, it's -3.
I might already be in on the 5. But the Raptors just, like... There's more care. There's more fun.
They have
there's
a bit more heart.
This team, the Sixers, absolutely. Maybe it changes just because there's completely different players, like a bunch of blue coats out there. Maybe they play well. But if we're just grading it on home and vibe, it's Raptors to win this game.
-3.
I don't love it.
Gorgeous pick.
It.
This is like the saddest pick we've ever had.
It's brutal.
Mine is actually, I'm pumped about mine. Flames money line against the Canucks. -150, but Flames are good at home.
Pay to play.
Flames want to win this one. They're fighting for that playoff spot. They're holding on to it. And who's behind them? The Vancouver Canucks. I just believe in those Flames. So I'm going to do that. Flames money line -150. Surprised at the
and it will be Dustin Wolf.
Oh, of course it's Dustin Wolf. I knew that. So it's moved to -144. Woo! So
there you go. We money both got coming bad in. Numbers. And that's our betting segment.
That's
bad
our betting segment.
Exclusive.
Well, we submit our numbers before the show, and things can change. We want to give you up to the minute updates.
That's what we do here.
Okay.
Wolf versus Kevin Lankinen.
Well, now that's good. Now that we've read the injury report between the, what were they, the Blue Coats and the 905?
Delaware Blue Coats, Raptors 905.
Want to wrap Coach up with Bankery. Some, if there's more Vlad you want to touch on?
Yeah, so like we're getting it from Shai today, basically the crux of it. $50 million separates these two sides on a 14-year deal. 50 divided by 14 is ain't much. We're talking about, you know,
like $3 million.
Middle reliever cost per year.
People were saying a Miles Straw.
Yeah.
Less than a mile straw.
I mean, straw, it didn't cost him $11 million to bring
so it's
straw
like less
in?
Than a mile straw.
Yeah, that's
mile
way
straw
less than a
might
straw.
Not even
so I guess my point is, like, if you're bringing in Miles Straw on a whim to try and be like, hey, Roki Sasaki, come over, like, should you not pony up the $50 million it will take to get Vladdy? And it was a little bit more nuanced yesterday where it was like, hey, Vlad, we'll give you $500 million, but actually it's $400 million because we're doing the deferred payment delayed value thing. But if it's actually $50 million of real dollars that separates the two, it would be hard to stomach and hard to not be mad as a fan base at management for letting the most important player on this team walk. So, yeah, all this news coming out, I think it, at least in the court of public opinion, favors Vladimir Guerrero.
I agree. And yesterday we got it kind of live right before the show, so we didn't get all the information. But with Shai's article and kind of the math, when you spread it out to, what, $3.5, $7 million a season is – it's within reach, folks.
Yeah, because before...
But maybe this means it is within reach. Like, we know the numbers are literally...
Yeah, they should get a deal done.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm actually feeling weirdly more confident that they can get a deal done now that I know this.
Yeah.
And
it felt like it was $600 million before yesterday, and now it's $500, and that's a big difference.
Okay, I have to press the sim lottery on Tankathon. Ready?
Oh, yeah, go.
Oh my, we got second overall pick. Utah 1, Raptors 2.
It's not Cooper Flagg, but.
Okay, I'm happy with it. Leave it. Good. Don't touch it until the next time the Raptors play. That's what we do here on the Fan Pregame.
Okay, there you go.
Everyone have a nice night. We'll see you tomorrow, Baby Friday.